Operator, could you please confirm that the recording started, please?
Hi, Avery.
Hi. She told me it had when I came in.
Thank you. Jay Scott, would you like a roll call of who we have on today?
I would, please.
Good morning, good evening to everyone. On today's call we have, and excuse me for the pronunciations for some of the names, Jay Scott Evans, Cheryl Langdon Knoll, Jonas Soinen, Sabaya, Alexei Sozonov, Alexei Mikhailov, Avery Doria. From staff we have Marika Konings, Ken Bauer, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We also have apologies from Liz Gaster. And we have Ilya, who is on the Adobe Connect, but not yet on the call. And if I could just please remind everyone, as there are quite a few of us on the call today, to please state your names when you talk. This will help with transcriptions. Thank you.
All right. So as I said previously before, we have a draft version of the Charter Drafting Guidelines in front of us, dated 21 August. This is the version that is on the wiki. It is merely textually a duplication of the PDF version and the Word version that is also linked on the wiki. The only difference between this particular version and those two is that Avery Doria has been kind enough to review and go through and put in her individual comments and parentheticals throughout the document itself. At this point, Marika, I'm going to turn it over to you to cover the sections, and then we can discuss those and Avery's comments as they come up. There?
Yeah. So if we maybe start then with 1.1, I don't think, well, I can maybe first go into the section. I made a little change there in moving some of the history of the document, of how it was developed, to the end of the whole document. Because I think going forward, when groups are reviewing this, they're probably more interested in the actual content and the template than they are in how this document was actually developed. So, you know, my proposal was to move that to the end of the document. So the rest of the sections is basically as you developed prior to my involvement. So moving then to section 1.1, the announcement of a working group. So basically we put in there several avenues that can be explored, suggested avenues for when a working group has been is in the process of being created. So, I don't know, do you want me to go through different things or just give people a couple of seconds to read through it and make comments? What would you prefer?
One of the things, I noticed that in several points throughout the document, Avery had said something, you know, like, well, there needs to be some sort of standard suggested. And I would put to the group here, if they do not think, if of the bullet points, if maybe some of the bullet pointed suggestions for circulation of a call for volunteers shouldn't be required rather than mere suggestions. In other words, at a minimum, that they have to do a call or volunteer at A and B. And then if they want to do some additional suggestions are X, Y, and Z.
This is Subaya here making a comment on that. I didn't think about it before, but now that you bring it up and with Avery's point, I think personally I would say that at least for that one, in terms of a wide call for volunteers, giving enough time for people to be brought in, especially a more diverse group, what I would say would be pretty much a requirement. I mean, I didn't read it as a suggestion when I read through it, but now, you know, being pointed out, I suspect that should be a requirement. You know, that's my point of view.
Yeah, I have my little agreed hiccup as well, Cheryl Langdonor here.
All right. Okay.
I can make the change in the next version, basically highlighting that the first two are really requirements. The third one is more of an option depending on the subject matter of the working group.
And I think also, yes, I think that that would be an idea that I think that at a minimum you're required to do, and then of course you're not additional ideas to make it broad and to make sure that you're making it as all-encompassing, you should consider, and it's suggested, and then do the third bullet point.
Okay.
Now, Aubrey, you have a comment here.
Yeah.
About importance.
Yeah. I was agreeing in principle that, you know, in the announcement explaining the what, why, wherefore, and you'll notice that the same kind of comment occurs in several plays. Importance tends to be a relative term. Why is something important, you know, always includes a and more than. So I was looking for, as I say, I was agreeing with the idea, but I was looking more for the motivation, the reason, the purpose, that there's any number of other words that keep out things that are possibly value judgment or can be judged as value judgment.
Well, I would say that looking at the list that follows after the phrase that is, which seems to be explanatory, that purpose would be a better word. So as to the purpose of the activity, that is why the effort is being undertaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Jonna. I think I agree on that. I mean, like, the purpose or motivation, I'm not native speaker, so I'm not sure of the kind of difference between those two, but either of them is better than importance, because everything is important, otherwise wouldn't be done in the first place.
I'm not sure whether this is a better word, but just to throw in the word here, significance, I don't know where that
This is Marika. Just to add to that, I think the reason why we put importance wasn't really as, you know, more important than others, but more in the context of to explain to those reading it why they should care. So I agree. I mean, maybe purpose is a better word, but I think that was the thinking behind it. Not as much that this is working group, it's more important than the other working group, but why doesn't matter to you, basically.
Cheryl here, therefore, on that rationale, in my opinion, purpose is a perfect word for that.
I agree, and I think, Marika, that purpose and then the list behind it, you know, allow someone to make the subjective choice of why they should care.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree.
So I think that if we've got a consensus from everybody on the call, we'll agree that perhaps we should delete the term importance and insert the term purpose.
Yep.
Hearing no objections, I'll ask Marika to make that change in the next draft. All right. Marika?
Yeah, then on the next section, I think before that was called something like security or had a different term, but I interpret that as more talking about, you know, transparency and openness and making sure that, you know, everyone can participate. So that's how this section came about. I think initially this had as well, I think a suggestion from Ken to talk indeed about, you know, the importance, or we just talk the purpose and to communicate that, and I think we've incorporated that now in the other section. So this is a question for the group. Are people comfortable? What is listed here? Are there any items that you initially had thought of that belonged in this part of the document?
The only thing that I would say is there any document within the GNSO or being developed by one of the other groups that should be cross-referenced here that covers this topic?
Are we now in 1.2, this year?
Yes, we're on 1.2. I'm sorry.
Yeah. My fault.
This is something we can check. I mean, the idea is once we have a more final draft of this, to sit together with the other team members working on the other groups to make sure that we have, you know, everything is aligned. And for some of the items, we have already been able to do that and identify items that are being worked on, like the template for the statement of interest. So, you know, the idea would definitely be to make sure that in the end, all the documents coming together are aligned and, you know, are saying the same thing. So. But if anyone is aware and is participating in those other groups of anything that should be here, you know, please do speak up.
All right, let's move to 1.3, please.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So 1.3 is on the purpose, importance, and expectations of the chair. And maybe I think Avery made quite some comments, so maybe that's the way to work through the document. I don't know, Avery, if you want to...
Sorry I made so many comments.
Yeah.
I just tend to do that. I am agreeing in principle. The word strong is always a concern to me because we all have different views of what strength is. And some people's notions of strength could be quite harmful to a working group. The word respect is important. People get killed for it, and respect is certainly a word that's prevalent in jails and can cost you your life. And so I have trouble with the word. And so I'm looking with things like experience, balance, fair, neutral, and form. There are lots of really important adjectives that don't necessarily have as much baggage. And so, again, I'm sort of agreeing with the idea, but I'm worried about what other people might read into the words.
What about if we said, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, just Subhaya here. I was just going to just say, I'm okay with all of that, but I think that the initial notion, I mean, basically experience, balance, that's all fine. And I think that the I'm okay, you know, I mean, I'm agreeing with what Ivan says. I think that this makes sense. But I think that perhaps the person or the intention perhaps of putting the word strong in there was less about maybe, you know, ordering people around all that. But I think I'm just trying to read into it myself, you know. And I'm saying it's probably because the idea of decisive, you know, because I think that's something that a chair probably has to do in difficult circumstances. So maybe that word might replace that sort of notion that strong may have brought in. I don't know. What do you think, Ivy?
Well, someone else wanted to speak before me, but I would worry about that too because some people – being decisive means making all the
that's
decisions.
Right. No.
And so I think experience covers it. Experience,
okay,
being a chair of working groups covers these things. But, hey.
My only comment would be that, maybe we want to base this around the person's past record, right? So, you know, an experienced chair with a reputation or past record of guiding, you know, effective group work will be a key ingredient for a successful outcome.
I think we maybe. What if this is Jay Scott? And by the way, that was Gray Chenoweth.
Oh yes, I'm sorry.
I'm doing that for the record, Gray. How about we just say an experienced chair with strong leadership skills will be a key ingredient because it's strong in that term. I think what Marika was looking for, trying to convey, was someone with leadership skills.
Because strength implies, sorry Cheryl here, a number of other characteristics which may in fact be maladaptive to facilitation and openness and sharing.
Right, but so how about if we did that, an experienced chair with strong leadership skills, a key ingredient of a successful outcome.
Sounds great to me.
Okay, to me.
Aubrey, does that sort of...
Yeah.
And we'll have a chance to look at this again and think about it again once it's been redrafted, but why don't we start with that? Marika, did you get that?
Yep, I did.
Jay Scott, Cheryl here. Just as a sidebar on that, I just popped into the chat, but just for those who may not be, you know, on the Adobe room, and I guess also for the record, it may be not within this particular document, but as an analogous event at some point that could be useful, actually ICANN-wide, for an exploration and perhaps a little in-service training on what experience and desired characteristics and guidelines for chairing and variety of things, including working groups, that could be explored. It's certainly something I've seen in other organisations.
And I have made that suggestion to Paul, to me. I have not made it to Ron Beckstrom, that one of the things they probably should try to do is identify potential leaders and do a little, like, use some of the time at the face-to-face meetings to do some leadership.
Good heavens above, Jay Scott, that'll never work. That sounds like a good plan. Sorry, that was me tongue in
cheek. I just said the way you perpetuate getting people involved is identifying, doing self-identification, and then bringing them on board with, you know, some skills and having some workshops that are outside policy. So, but I think that's a good idea. But I think strong leadership skills, and maybe, Marika, we want to just say one comment about facilitation in there, and I'll leave that to your drafting. But that sort of better defines the role and sort of takes it out from a role of control and more a role of facilitation. So if we could maybe put a comment about facilitation in there as well.
Okay. And Jay Scott, I'm more than happy to assist in the future planning on convincing the new CEO that that other activity is a worthy one, as an organisation that works with volunteers really needs that.
Well, maybe when we get to Seoul, we can pull someone inside and talk about that, Cheryl.
Works for me.
Okay. So is that okay, Marika? Did you just maybe in that sentence also put in, you know, with strong leadership and an experienced leader with strong leadership and facilitation skills, blah,
yep.
blah, blah. I just think adding facilitation in sort of better defines the role that you're not controlling this, you're just moving things along. Is there any objection to adding something like that in? Hearing none, we will put it in the next draft for everyone to consider. All right, Aubrey, you had another comment about, I think it's another, if I get it, it's another emotional word, but if you'd like to explain your comment.
Yeah, okay, let me get to it. Sorry about that.
That's okay. We're still in 1.3 for anyone who's joined us or had to join back in because you've dropped off. I noticed that Johan had dropped off, so that's where we are. We're at 1.3. We're in the paragraph, non-parenthetical paragraph, below Aubrey's first parenthetical insertion.
Yeah, again, it's a word choice, and I'm agreeing in principle, but, fussing over words. That unjustified requires basically an a priori judgment that someone is making an unjustified. And so you have to hear and listen. So the skill is really that someone should be able to listen and understand the place an argument has within a discussion. And at a certain point, certainly they have to be able to tell that. But calling anyone's opinion unjustified is problematic, and it immediately puts somebody on a defensive. And that's not terribly productive, whereas, you know, however we feel about something being justified or not, knowing that it has no current place in a discussion or something like that is much closer to being objective. Obviously, there's still a subject making a decision, but it's closer to something that is objective. So I just worried about, you know, putting in our principle of charters that there are people who have unjustified viewpoints, when it may just be that we don't understand the justification, we can't see it from their perspective, they have language problems, whatever. And so it's too easy a conclusion to jump to if the word is there.
Hear, hear.
Would we solve it by just taking out the unjustified and just say who raised issues in an effort to block progress?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, my only concern about that is that you could raise an issue in an effort to block progress, but actually be doing it appropriately. I mean, there's sometimes when progress actually should be stopped, right, because something isn't being done right or an appropriate process isn't being followed. So sometimes stopping progress is actually, I mean, as strange as it sounds, it's appropriate if the progress that is getting made is in an inappropriate direction or happening in an inappropriate manner. So my suggestion would be that it's really a distinction between either effective or I guess I'd say like appropriate reasons for dissent or constructive reasons for dissent, who are offering constructive dissent, and those who are offering you know unconstructive or inappropriate commentary, or but that's the distinction that I would make, is between people that are trying to raise things constructively and people that are trying to raise things not in a constructive fashion.
Cheryl here, Jay Scott, if I could just respond to that.
Please.
At this point, I just want to bring in a little bit of anecdote and experience specific to this point, and I'm coming down very firmly on the side of just removing the word unjustified. I hear what you're saying about sometimes there are in inverted commas, justifications for things not going forward. But in fact, I'd argue against that being, pardon the pun, the only way forward. Let me give you an example. In the communication consumers work we've done late last year regarding mobile premium services, which is a hugely emotive subject both for those who end up paying huge amounts of money and for those who end up making huge amounts of money in the system. Our government required us to make some form of industry self-guideline effort. And as you might imagine, we ended up in very much a similar situation, whereas the consumer end of the spectrum felt we ought not go forward on a few points, and the industry side of the spectrum felt quite the opposite. It was, in fact, far more useful for us to go through a process under proper due diligence, have all of the necessary steps in our established guidelines and agreements for developing policy go through, and then write our letters of dissent to the regulator, pointing out why on points A, B and C, the community of consumer representatives dissent on it, and this is why. And that was actually a more powerful outcome, and in fact the regulator inserted the codes, the sections of the codes, and it did actually become a regulation then, that we would still have been in rooms fighting with lawyers over. It was actually more expedient to not stop the process and the progress, to use your example.
Yeah, and I guess what my only comment back would be that I think, to me, that isn't blocking progress. That's facilitating progress. But someone might say, hey, you know, we can't send this out. This wasn't, you know, we didn't reach the consensus that we were supposed to reach, right? And so I guess you're saying that even if you're not following your own procedures, it's better just to go through with the procedure and then have the person say at the end of the day that procedure wasn't
that
followed.
Ability to have dissent and do that rather than end up taking 3 years to do something where you have a 3 month end point can be much more valuable for all parties.
Okay.
And this is Marika, if I can just add something. I mean, I think the word progress, can have different meanings. I mean, progress can mean moving forward, but you can make progress as well by just digging into the issues and maybe taking a step back and looking at them again because a new point of view has been brought forward and then continuing. So I think here progress should really be seen as, you know, someone that doesn't want to move any direction, basically, or that's the only objective, to really just block the progress, block the process.
It's more of an obstruction than a progress.
Lack
of progress.
This is Subhaya. I think that we may be visiting some of these points again, similar things along the way. We've got one or two along these lines. I think ultimately, in any working group, there are going to be instances of people trying to block things or unjustified. I mean, they are going to be. I mean, however you define them in terms of these things are going to happen. But ultimately, the way it works out that some group or party is trying to actually stop it or it's unjustified, I think the only outcome there is either the group as a whole basically just says no to the person, or the chair steps in, or if that doesn't work out, it goes to the appeals process. I mean, that's how these difficult situations would probably be ultimately taken care of anyway. So from the perspective of the document that we are writing right now, the catch-all is there, if there's a problem, how that will all get taken care of. So in all these places where we write it, we might as well write it with the best of intentions, you know, where we don't single out somebody for being unjustified or anything like that. In the document itself, when we write it with the best interests of everybody, thinking that the best things are going to happen. The catch-all is already in there if things don't work out, right? I mean, I hope I'm making sense in what
I'm saying. I think we're coming down to by. I think your point is well placed. I think, though, that I hear now with Cheryl's explanation to Gray about using the appeals process, that we have come to consensus we'll just remove the word unjustified?
Yeah. I think that would work.
Everyone?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So, Marika, we've got that. And then we have this sticky point, Aubrey, regarding...
reopening.
Yes.
Yeah, and I agree completely with not reopening issues with nothing to add. But I think that, you know, sometimes someone will join a group because they heard that, you know, a certain decision has been made without hearing a point of view. We definitely have to require them to have listened to everything and read everything. But if a certain perspective is missing from the considerations, and perhaps, you know, there needs to be a process of explaining this to the chair first. I don't know, but just an absolute prohibition from bringing in new evidence is something that I'm concerned of. And I have seen it happen in groups where there's the you may not reopen issues, but there's somebody there with something to say that's never been considered. And that has to be allowed, I think. Otherwise, we end up with a defective result.
Would it be a suggestion to add then something like, unless there is support in the working group to revisit the issue in light of the new evidence or of the light of new information?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that would work. But Subhaya, yeah. But I think you could make what Aubrey's saying a bit more wider, by just not limiting it to the person who's joining newly. I mean, it could be somebody in the working group already. If something absolutely new, a new piece of thing, information has been discovered, there should be a way to go back to revisit. For even someone who's participated all along, I would.
Yes. Nothing wrong with an epiphany from time to time. Sorry, Cheryl here.
Aubrey, with another comment, it may be reasonable to put in, you know, I worry a little bit about saying that the group has to agree to reopen it.
Because,
you know, that means that, again, they have to understand that it's something new. But certainly, you know, perhaps something that requires someone with new, not just a new person, but with new, to have cleared it with the chair.
Yep.
Yeah, or say something with the appropriate, kind of like with this Yonne, by the way, with the appropriate support or something like that, that it's just not one person coming in claiming to have new information and reopening old issues, that there is some kind of support that it is a new issue and this should be looked at.
So, Marika, what I would suggest we do is we handle in a separate sentence reopening previously decided questions, come up with something that applies to both new members and current members, and then leave the sentence regarding making sure that new members are up to speed as is.
Okay.
Okay? And then we can consider how that drafting is done in the next draft for the one sentence that applies to reopening issues, previously decided issues. Because the reality is at some point you're going to have to say we're moving on. You know, so somebody's got to make that call. Right, Aubrey, you had another point.
Yep. The next one had to do with the chair basically stating an opinion, and I totally agree that a chair should be able to give her opinion or his opinion on a subject. But what I think needs to be added is that they can't become an advocate for that position. and that anybody that has the need to be an advocate should not be in the chair. So it certainly is reasonable for, you know, J. Scott in these environments to say, you know, I think this wording, you know, does this and this and this, and then back off and let the rest of the people talk. But it's when a chair not only states their opinion, but then constantly is driving the argument that it becomes problematic. So that's why I would add, but not be an advocate, a phrase, you know?
Sounds like we're writing that manual for the chairs on the side again.
I agree. I think about that a lot.
Yes, I think that should be an additional sentence after ruling as the chair that states that point. That would be what I would suggest. What do others think? That just take the, not ruling as the chair, but then also make the additional point that you can state an opinion, but you're not to advocate an opinion.
Well, because it's a most common failing that we see developing in the heat of argument on an important point, I think it's well worth stating, yes.
I would agree.
Okay, Marika?
Yeah, I'm for it.
Yeah, I can put in some language so the group can review that in the next draft.
Super. Great. All right. Now we've got the appointment of co-chairs.
Yeah, my point in this, with this is Aubrey again, is a little flip, but it's basically working groups stop often when their chairs disappear. Now, yes, a vice chair can often take place, but with co-chairs, basically, you know, they coordinate among themselves. It's not really it's just a pointing out a point. It's not a serious, you know, principle like some of the others might have been.
I can try to include some language about absence of the chair or something that, you know, can either be vacation or illness or whatever to highlight your point, if that's okay.
You may say could be considered and is encouraged.
Yeah, so this is Yonan. I think this is just, I actually mentioned this to Avery briefly as well. Here we use co-chair. Later on in the text we use vice chair, and I see that them as two different things, because when you have a vice chair you have a clear chairman and then you have a kind of a secondary. And however, as Avery says, a co-chair is somebody who's the chair's peer and should be on the same level as the chair, in the sense that, or the question is actually that if there are no chairs, if there are only co-chairs, like what we have in IETF, there is no kind of ranking between the chairs. It has the benefit that they are all up to speed when that is kind of needed. But if the question is that do we have somewhere kind of like decided that we have one main chair and then chairs that are kind of a notch underneath the chair, or do we have chair? Are all the chairs on the same level?
I think
you got what.
Well, as I read the document, it looked like you could. We suggest you have a vice chair, and this point is that you can consider having co-chairs.
Cheryl here, Jay Scott. I think the encouragement for consideration of co-chair, particularly at situations where it's going to be extremely useful, and I think most people, when they're setting up this process, can do a little bit of crystal ball gazing and guess that this is the type of topic that they're about to head into, or the work group is about to head into, that co-chairing would be advantageous. I think to make it mandatory is faulty, because what you end up with is all your best talent working themselves to death in the volunteer world, and in fact not making, wrangling the policy development processes very effectively, but not contributing to the processes where their communities or constituencies may have actually headed them towards ICANN to make specific input, as opposed to helping others do so. So I think it's a recommendation status, and again, it's one of those things that can come into that in-service training as well.
Okay. Well, I think, Marika, with those comments, you can craft some language we can look at.
Okay.
All right, 1.4.
Oh, just before that, G. Scott, I have actually a point at the very last paragraph of 1.3, just a clarification, is Subaya.
Sure.
I read through the whole document. That was the only thing I kind of spotted. And unlike Avery, who seems to have picked up a lot of stuff with her eagle eyes, the point that I had was the sentence just above 1.4 says, the chartering organization working with and staff.
It should be the...
Yeah, I guess that's, yeah, correct. Because first of all, I think that's sort of a grammatical issue, but also I was not clear whether it was independent role that staff could do this, or chartering organization could do this, or they were, together they had to be able to choose a professional facilitator.
I guess the reason why staff was added there, that is, of course, as well a budget question. So presume there, and as well, staff might have information on facilitators.
Correct, that's fine. So I guess it will be working with the staff. That would be the language then. Yep.
Is it the wonder the spell grammar checker let that get through?
Because
I hadn't noticed it. You know, your mind just reads it sometimes as you expect it to be. Nice pickup. Well done.
Yeah, so it's the two of them together.
Okay, fine.
That was Jay Scott. 1.4, other important roles.
Yeah, just to add one thing here, because it doesn't come up in the wiki version. I think it might have moved to the end. But one of the questions that we're asking here is, on the role of the liaison, should there be any kind of restrictions there on, how liaisons can participate? Should they be able to state opinions and advocate for certain issues? So that's a question, and I think Avery's already put some her opinion there, but it's a question as well for the broader working group. Should that kind of restriction be put in charters?
Okay, yeah, I must have missed that when I was transferring the files in. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the issues with the wiki, that some comments might disappear. I think they've moved to the end. No problem. That's why I'm highlighting it now to the group.
And the comment I put in, because it came in italics without spaces, is hard to see. I honestly have a strong opinion
about putting some sort of restriction on the role of a liaison. In other words, a liaison's role, as I understand what Marika is saying and looking at what Avery has said, is not really a member of the working team, working group, and not really an advocate for any position, but more serves as an interfacer between the chartering organization to handle sort of administrative issues and do reporting. Mm-hmm. Not an advocate.
This is Marika, if I can maybe add something, because just to point out that it is not the current practice, or at least in many of the working groups I'm responsible for, liaisons take quite a proactive role, often as well because they are subject matter experts, or they're the ones that as well have raised the issue in the council, so they have a particular interest in the issue. So I think that's well why they might have volunteered for the liaison role, because they were planning anyway to take on that role, and it's not always that council members participate in the working group. So that's something to take into account. If such a restriction would be put in place, would it be more difficult to find volunteers to take on this role? you know, just to sit on the calls and not being able to actually state their views or engage? Or, you know, should that be, how it should be in the future?
It seems to me like there's kind of three types of roles, right? There's one which is kind of the most minimal is an observer role, where you don't actually express any opinions. The second one is more of a chair type role, which is that you can express opinions but not advocate for them, or provide information about advocate for a particular position. And the third is a fully participating individual. So I guess the question is, what I mean, I guess we could either suggest that it's just clear what type of role the person's playing, because it seems like, I mean, I can certainly see why there would be real value to allowing a liaison to provide information and even advocate for a position.
It's Aubrey, if I can get in the queue on it.
Okay, Aubrey, there's no one else in the queue.
Okay. I think that it's not necessarily an observer role. I think it's an informational role is indeed a valuable role for a liaison to provide. They're the ones that have context of what's going on in other groups. They're the one that can often provide answers, quick answers to, you know, thinking within a council, within other groups. They could certainly go back and forth carrying questions and clarifications. I think a problem when they become an advocate, and I could see actually not having to put more restriction on them than you have for a chair, that they have to be neutral, that certainly they can add input, but that they can't advocate, is because that person actually carries, and I know it sounds silly to say it, but they actually carry additional mantle of power. You know, they are part of the group that is going to, you know, approve or disapprove something. So their utterances, whereas the working group chair doesn't really have that. They certain the working group chair has the ability to declare consensus and not, but they're not going to be part of the group that's later making a decision on what the working group does and whether the working group followed due process and all that stuff. So the liaison really has to be extremely careful not to abuse that power. Now, one way of looking at it is saying no council member can be a member. And in some places that may actually be reasonable, though I don't think we can say that. I think it would be a reasonable thing for this new council in its new managerial role to understand that when they become a council member, and it's easy for me to say because I won't be there, but that they're taking on responsibilities that are administrative and that they are expected to act as liaison for groups, but not the ones that they are champions of. And it seems to me part of the responsibility, but also one has to be careful of the power you carry by being one of those that decides on the recommendation later.
Would a suggestion be to include some language, something saying like, ideally the liaison should have, you know, informational role, neutral, and some of the characteristics, so we, you know, make it a strong suggestion, but not, you know, an absolute requirement, because I think it will probably require a bit of transition time before we hope probably get to that kind of stage where the liaison takes that more neutral role.
Yeah, this is Subhaya. I wanted to add another point that I just realized when Avery spoke. If a liaison is, a liaison is a liaisoning to somewhere, right? So it's from some other group that they, in some sense, represent. Now, if the liaison decides to take an advocate position on a particular topic, the question then becomes, is that advocate position being taken on behalf of the person, the liaison, the person, the singular person themselves, or for the group that they represent? You know, how do we know that? Or is that something that one needs to consider?
As the neutral chair, I would like to state my opinion.
Well done.
Yeah. My opinion is this. I think that the liaison should only serve an informational role. Because they may be involved in some dispute resolution around consensus and other issues, I think they should be more ministerial and not advocating a position. And so I think every effort should be made to say that they are monitoring, they are taking, reporting back to the chartering organization, that they, you know, that's their role. Their role is not to be an advisor on the underlying subject matter. It is not to advocate on the subject matter. It is to assist the chair and the chartering organization with staying informed on task and resolving any disputes.
Guys, got Cheryl Langdonor here. Just to come in firmly behind that set of principles and bring in some CCTLD experience specifically to policy development and how we do it here in Australia. In the first 6 years of AUDA's life, any board member could not have anything to do with our policy panels. And in fact, when I was elected to the board, I had to quite literally give up a policy development process midstream because, you know, never the twain should meet. Through experience, we've found that we've come back to exactly this role where we actually appoint a liaison, quite restricted in what purpose is, from the board, from both supply and demand, remembering that here we are the chartering organisation as the board, to the policy panel, and how much that helps in our boardroom when we are discussing the outcomes of a at-arm's-length policy development process is, I can't begin to tell you how useful it is, so definitely agree.
And Marika, to Sobaya's point, I think we need to distinguish here between then liaisons that, you know, specifically represent organizations and their views, and here the more administrative or managerial
organization.
Yes. Because I think if you talk about, you know, liaison from the GNSO to the CCNSO, they have a different role than I think what is envisioned here. So, you know, maybe we need to just make clear working group liaisons.
Maybe we need to, I mean, if you want to categorize liaisons, but as I see the document here, it's only talking about the chartering organization. I don't see.
Correct.
So that's the role I'm talking about. Now,
mm-hmm.
if a member of a working group is, quote unquote, a liaison from another advisory council or something, they have, this would only apply to a member of the chartering organization.
Yeah.
From the perspective of the chartering organization liaison, I think I can at least support what J. Scott's suggesting.
So I can write some draft language there based on the discussion here for the group to consider in the next version.
And what you may do is to, just for the point of clarity with the language, is put chartering organization liaison and other liaison.
As long as they don't use the initial CLO, I can't have that. I know I can always use the things down to the letters, and that's my common law trademark. You can't have CLO.
And by doing that, you get over this hump that somebody joins and their title from their group is liaison, when in fact they're not reporting back to the supporting organization, the chartering organization.
Yep.
So if we could do some clarification around that to say that this neutrality, this informational role, is solely limited to the charting organization liaison.
Mm.
I just think that would make it more specific. That's just a suggestion from the neutral chair.
Okay. And on that point, I would just like to encourage everyone, I'm not sure what everyone had a chance to really review this document in detail. If you have any specific language suggestions, feel free to either, you know, track changes or just send them in an email, and, you know, I can incorporate them. So if people feel very strongly on, you know, how they would like to write a certain thing, you know, they should feel free to suggest that.
Okay, so next category was expert advisors and consultants.
I think this is some language that I think was already there. I mean, on the next point, the roles that are developed here, and I'm not sure what I actually put it in the note again, but this is based on what the PDP work team has developed or has assigned as staff roles, because they had a discussion as well that staff often fulfill different roles depending on where in the organization or where in which department you look. So this is a breakdown that was developed by the PDP work team. So again, to make sure that we align language and categories, I've imported that to here.
All right. I see that we are coming up on the hour. And what I would suggest we do at this point, because the next section is very detailed.
Got a lot in it, yeah.
Is that we break the call at this point and have another call next week.
Mm-hmm.
And we go over the section 2 and hopefully 3, because 3 is very short. If you have any additional comments with regards to section 1, you certainly may feel free to put them in comments to the group. This is my suggestion, and if anyone disagrees, please speak up. But I'd like to keep these to an hour if possible.
I appreciate your diligence on that point.
Hear, hear. Cheryl here, Jay Scott. Can we discuss Marika's point on moving future meetings for a start?
I'm going to have to ask everyone's indulgence. If you want me to chair the meeting, we need to do the call next Thursday rather than Wednesday, because I am on a plane on Wednesday.
I think Thursday there's... Is there a council meeting, Avery?
Yes, there's a council meeting.
I can do it Tuesday or Thursday. We don't like to do Friday for Cheryl.
The one-off doesn't matter, Jay Scott. Heavens above, that's not a problem. One-off occasionally doesn't matter.
Is Bella, are you on the phone?
Absolutely, I'm here, Jay Scott.
Why don't you send a doodle poll for Monday, Tuesday, and Friday of next week? We will try to, in the next couple of days, decide on a time based on responses we receive. Oh, it will be an hour call
Friday,
next
fine.
Week. I apologize, but if we're going to hit Marika's time with her children, I'm on a plane right in the middle of that time. And so I can't, and I don't think they'll let me talk on the cell phone.
Jay Scott, but not as yet. They won't let you yet.
So is that okay that we have that flexibility for next week, everyone?
It's Thursday.
That makes sense
everyone.
To me.
It's Monday, Tuesday, and Friday.
Not Thursday.
Not Thursday, because there's a council call.
At 2100 UTC.
I think we'd like, to go an hour to an hour and a half. Let's see, what are we, 1700 UTC for this time?
Yes.
Yep.
So as I understand,
I'm fine every time, anytime after 1800 UTC. So
okay, so if we could do 19, 20, or 21 UTC.
Yep.
As our choices on those days.
Yeah, just as an informational matter, this Yona, I'm not able to make the call at any time next week. I'm going to be on vacation, but I'll try to provide some comments or at least do another review on this.
That would be absolutely wonderful if you could do that. And there are several versions of this that you can use. And if you want to send them to me, Yonas, I will make sure that they get presented to the group.
Sure.
Any comments you have, I will just be your voice next week.
Okay. And
curious thought, but I think I'll go with that.
Everyone, I would like to thank you all. We can sign off now. We'll have a doodle poll coming out in the next day or so that we'll try to resolve and get a meeting notice out. I appreciate everyone for helping out, and Marika, especially you, for picking up the heavy load so quickly and deftly. And Ken, if you're still on the call, for assisting Marika in the transition. To both of you, thank you very, very much. And we will talk to you again next week.
Bye, all.
Bye.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.